Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity. This is episode 30, and we are going to talk about stuff. And I say we, that means me, because there's nobody else around, although there's like a ton of people in my head who are all talking at the same time. I wish they'd shut up. But, you know, maybe that counts as we. But I figured this is episode 29, and I couldn't think of anything super great to talk about. So it got me thinking about other things, because as I went down the path of trying to think about what to think about, and then as I was talking amongst myself, as we talked amongst ourselves inside my head, all the different voices, I got them to quiet down. You know, you have to imagine it's like the floor of the House of Representatives or something up in there, and, you know, everyone's just obnoxious. So I basically was like, what should I talk about today? And I started thinking about different topics. And I want to do a topic about, you know, drugs and drug problems. I want to do a topic about depression. I want to do a topic about anxiety. But I feel like those are episodes that really should have guests. And I've been trying to coordinate times to get guests. And I've got a couple people who I might, you know, bring in, but I feel like those are episodes that would make more sense. But, you know, so I kind of headed down that path in my mind, and then I was like, okay, back at square one. And then I thought of the count from Sesame Street. One, And that, you know, led me down the path of thinking about cookies because of the Cookie Monster. And that is what I'm going to talk about today. And you're wondering, okay, this is it. This is the one, episode 29. He lost his stuff. His brains are leaking out his ears. No, they're not, because I contain them with these headphones. Durr. I'm going to talk about stream of consciousness, because it's just interesting. And it's, you know, all this stuff fits into being a part of your identity and how you think about things. And it's actually a good, you know, jumping off point for brainstorming. So, you know, maybe this is like a stream of consciousness / brainstorming ideas episode, but stream of consciousness is just kind of a fun thing to me because I used to, you know, write, do creative writing when I took classes in college. That, you know, was always like the fun part of college to me, was doing the writing classes, and we'd do exercises that were essentially about stream of consciousness writing, which, you know, essentially is kind of starting with a thought and letting that thought pick up another thought, and you just kind of write it down. And you know, a lot of times it's like journaling is kind of the common term, you know, where you're just kind of free writing, right? Just because you're just trying to figure out like what you might, you know, what direction you might want to go in. And again, it's not just for writing. It's something that is a useful tool just in general, again, for brainstorming, because brainstorming is, you know, a pretty common thing for idea creation, and then, you know, product creation, you know, in, you know, business or wherever, you know, whatever you're trying to do to try to create an idea to accomplish something. You know, this is often what you do. You're trying to think of a podcast to make. You start off by thinking really hard about one thing, which kind of could jump off and get you thinking about another thing. You know, a lot of techniques are, you know, whiteboarding and you know, or jotting it down. Like, these are all things that could kind of help with it. But, you know, let's kind of leave it there, because keep you guessing what's next. But yeah, I'm going to let my mind run off. I like the idea of train of thought and the concept of the train derailing when your thoughts all of a sudden, you know, drop into a pit of darkness or something like that. But yeah, all right, hang tight. So a little bit of history on it, because of course, you know, got to hit you with some facts, but it was actually a psychologist in 1890. His name was William James, which always, you know, here we go, stream of consciousness. And this is also known as the tangent, but someone having two first names is always kind of funny to me. You know, like I always thought it would be kind of fun to be Derek as just my name. Yeah, I'm Derek. Like my last name was Derek, my first name was Derek. And I just didn't have a middle name because my parents just thought they were too good to give someone a middle name, you know? So, you know, I guess if I was born into a pretentious family, maybe I would have been Derek. But I don't know if there's any, well, I guess there's Bo Derek, right? So if I was Bo Derek's child and they called me Derek, I'd be Derek. So yeah, okay. We're going to count these like the count. One, stream of consciousness, tangent. Okay, so William James, and he, you know, wrote, I guess, a dissertation, a book, whatever you want to call it, The Principles of Psychology. It was, you know, the first attempt to kind of explain a character's consciousness or explain what that kind of style of thinking. And it was, you know, like I feel like that was a beautiful time for literary people, because you know, in this day and age, I feel like it's harder to, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, like, because I don't want to basically discredit anybody who's written since the printing press has been created, because I think there's tons of great stories and more great stories to come. But the thing that I think is kind of fascinating is to imagine that you're trying to write a book when it's just, you know, like quill feathers or whatever the heck they used to use, you know, the tips of a feather and ink, like liquid ink that you dipped in the ink, and then, you know, you scribbled out on parchment paper, because, you know, like the paper that we know it today didn't exactly exist, and it was limited supply, and if you wanted to create something to be reproduced, it essentially had to be handwritten, right? So I mean, at least maybe they had some kind of way to copy things or repeat, but not necessarily like how the printing press kind of changed everything, right? But, you know, I think it's just kind of an interesting kind of thought that it was not easy to create books. And, you know, to me, that's just kind of fascinating. And it takes a lot of dedication, you know, because that was important. And like I'm doing live lookup real quick of the printing press, which is actually 1440. So that guy doesn't get an excuse. I like to imagine that he might have been writing with a quill pen in the 1890s, but that was too late. Like, you know, he had the ability to create books with a little bit of help. But yeah, so my okay, number two, stream of consciousness, tangent, plenty to come. So, okay, let's get a little definition here too. So we talked about one of the guys who kind of used the term first, the guy with the two first names, William James. And, you know, I think it became common as a literary method for you know, a narrative mode. And it's kind of, yeah, okay, focus. See, this is dangerous for someone like me to be talking about stream of consciousness and then allowing it to seep into the recording of a podcast. So hang tight. No, okay, here. The definition, right, is, you know, a person's thoughts and conscious reactions to events perceived as a continuous flow. The term was introduced by William James. Okay, I already said that. I'm reading this off of a, you know, dictionary. com. Let's see. It's also a literary style in which a character's thoughts, feelings, and reactions are depicted in a continuous flow, uninterrupted by objective description or conventional dialogue. James Joyce, Virginia Woolf, Marcel Proust are among the notable early exponents. There you go. Dropping a little knowledge on you, you know, for sake of a podcast, surviving 29 episodes and finally reaching its point where it just crumbles and melts into itself. So I like writing. I like reading. We've already talked about this. And, you know, I love the idea of mechanisms to try to help create a better story, you know. So I like the idea of this being a technique. I have a problem with it because there actually was, and I'm trying to remember which, was Faulkner's, I think As I Lay Dying, was a stream of consciousness type of book, as I believe. And that was a hard book to read because it was stream of consciousness, but it also was told from, you know, the perspective of multiple characters, like per chapter, which was kind of crazy. And it was actually, you know, 15 different characters that kind of talk about the story as this, was it the mother? I think, I don't remember. I didn't really enjoy the book that much, so I'm not really remembering super great. Even if I'm looking it up and trying to figure it out, you know, there was just this one woman who was dying and these 15 characters that were surrounding her as it was happening. And, you know, I don't know. It was just hard to read, basically. But, you know, it was actually a narrative technique that Faulkner chose to use. And, you know, I think he leveraged it well, like for the sake of it, you know. It's just, I think generally, like that stream of consciousness kind of plays well with one character, maybe two, but especially if it's narrated, like jumping between the characters, like that's hard. I mean, it's hard to, for a reader, because you got to kind of, it's like you're shifting these conversations and you're, you know, each chapter, which they're not super long chapters, you're kind of refocusing back on the, you know, the character that's coming up. Right. So it's like you have to kind of shift your brain to kind of imagine a whole new persona, I guess is what I'm getting at. And then that's, I think, is tricky. So, you know, to me, that's one of those, I guess, personal preferences. Like I just didn't really dig it much. I didn't really, you know, stick with it, but like, I felt like I had to keep trying to come back to the thing, you know, and it just, I would lose interest easy. You know, it's one of those books that I probably read in between other books for several, who knows, months, I don't know, years. I don't even remember like when I think I was reading this in college because it was one of the books I had to read, but I was excited to read it too, you know, because I thought, oh, Faulkner, you know, Faulkner's, you know, he's Faulkner. He's, you know, one of the major writing influences. So it was kind of sad, like to kind of go and essentially get bored with a book that he wrote. But anyways, so, you know, back to stream of consciousness, because I had quickly pulled up on my screen As I Lay Dying and Faulkner, which then led me down this path of like, what other books did he write? But that's not the thing. I'm not gonna get into that. What was surprising was one of the Google search results was As I Lay Dying singer apologizes after murder for hire plot. And so then I, of course, I clicked on that link really quick, You know, I actually paused recording because it kind of sucked me in for a second because I'm like, what the heck? And apparently, you know, this was a lead singer of a band who actually got in trouble. Well, got in a lot of trouble because he tried to hire someone to kill his wife. And he actually was soliciting that help from an undercover police officer. So he ended up going to prison for like a year. And, you know, I just got sucked in for like 2 seconds. And I think that is a very common representation of the whole, you know, stream of consciousness. I don't want to say dilemma, but stream of consciousness activity, I guess you could say. I don't know what the right word is. If I start Googling that, then, you know, who knows where we'll end up. But when you have a stream of consciousness, a lot of times this happens, I feel like, when I'm on Twitter and I'm just, you know, going through, you know, it's like stories or whatever. And sometimes you like, you know, if something is appealing enough for me to kind of click through beyond the tweet, like a lot of times, you know, I'm just reading the headlines, like the 140 characters or whatever it is now, it's 200 something characters, the, you know, beyond the to go beyond the headline, you know, takes kind of a lot. Like, you know, it's not that it doesn't happen, it's just for every, you know, 10 tweets that I'm kind of flipping through, maybe one of them will pique my interest enough to kind of click on it to kind of end up on the site. And then as I kind of read a couple paragraphs of it, if it interests me or if I just kind of can figure out what's going on and I'm not that super into it, you know, obviously I click back and I start going through. And I think sometimes that's the trap we fall in when we're reading headlines, news headlines or whatever. And, you know, I feel like it was, you know, it's the result of social media. You know, I think some people kind of the same trap happens to them on Facebook too. You know, I think anywhere where you're kind of getting your news, but, you know, for me, if it's appealing enough and I end up on the actual end website. So, you know, if I'm on, if I'm reading a tech article and it's The Verge or Gizmodo, you know, these are ones that I follow. Or sometimes it's local things like it's NBC Connecticut, you know, or Fox Connecticut or whatever, Fox 61. And I end up on their site and I end up reading the entire article because it's got my interest. I'll end up at the end and there'll be suggested articles or just here's some more stuff. And sometimes you'll find, you know, that's where like you start pulling threads because all of a sudden you see some headline and then it might be vague, you know, and then you start kind of Googling it and you start just pulling threads. And next thing you know, like you're doing an hour of research on panda bears or something, you know, and it's kind of funny to me because that to me is perfect example of that. Of a stream of consciousness, but, you know, from a perspective of researching, in a sense, I guess to kind of try to satisfy your own curiosity, because that's pretty, I think, pretty common. But, you know, I feel like this could go into a very dangerous, not that I'm going to have a murder for hire plot, just to kind of put it out there, get it on the record, so it's said, you know. Like, I don't know why you even asked me about that again, but no. So, you know, in terms of stream of consciousness, it's a good example. You know, you start pulling threads on stuff. But again, because this could definitely turn into a 2-hour episode, who knows how long, actually, because I could sit here and just follow my stream of consciousness and this train will, you know, be up in the mountains and, you know, it on a downhill slope and just kind of coasting and then lose its brakes. And then now we're just all in trouble. Yeah. So you like that metaphor? Anyways, I'm going to pause for a second because I want to make sure that I get in the idea, the concepts that I want to talk about with brainstorming and, you know, idea generation for positive actions, you know, for a positive result and not just because of boredom and pulling threads and next thing you know, an hour's gone. So hang tight. have to be honest, I didn't really go into this episode from the point when I set everything up with the microphone and the camera. I had no intentions of talking about brainstorming. Wasn't even in my mind. And yet, here we are. Because I started to talk about stream of consciousness, and it sparked this thought in my head about how it's essentially a brainstorming methodology, right? Like, you know, kind of following the thoughts and pulling threads. But you can't just do it recklessly. You cannot be a reckless brainstormer or a reckless stream of consciousness user, just so you know. No, but I'm joking. That's not a real thing. But it was not in my mind, and I just kind of ended up saying, hey, there you go. I kind of went into this episode talking through random stuff and ended up with something that might actually be somewhat solid because, you know, of course, I'm sitting here and in a live fashion recording and thinking, okay, I know brainstorming, but I don't know all the technical terminology. And then it got me thinking, oh, I should just look up real quick, like the types. And holy crap, like I found on this Toots Plus site, tootsplus.com, a really great list of the types of brainstorming, which I'm going to quickly go through because it's kind of a good breaking off point. And I think because I did an episode a little while ago about, you know, do your research and, you know, the importance of it. And this is kind of evidence that sometimes you can just kind of do this stuff on the fly. Like, you know, you may have a presentation in an hour or two, and you may have it may have just been thrown on your lap. And, you know, you can, with a little bit of effort, find a way to get through that. You know, it may not be one of the best ones you've done, but, you know, it's something that you can kind of pull off. You know, I'm speaking strictly from like this, you know, this idea of you're working in an office or something like that, or, you know, this is a workplace thing. I definitely wouldn't recommend this if you're just all of a sudden like, I want to start a business. I got to go to the bank with a presentation on, you know, what my business plan is. I don't think it's a good idea to try to do a stream of consciousness brainstorming session an hour before you decide to go to the bank and cobble together some ideas about why your, you know, Razor scooter car wash idea is going to work, because, you know, you're just going to completely have a major oversight on the fact that people might drown, right? So that's one thing. Anyway, so analytic brainstorming, there's a couple that are, you know, mentioned, like mind mapping, reverse brainstorming, gap filling, driver analysis, SWOT analysis, the five whys, starbursting. The one that I remember from business school was like the SWOT analysis, and never really thought of this as like brainstorming, you know, because what we would do, and this is actually one of my favorite parts of doing a business principles or whatever the heck the class was called. It came in business analysis. When we used to look at real companies and we had business cases or case studies, I mean, of businesses and real problems, you know, so a case study would be written up to kind of give you whatever details it was necessary to kind of to challenge you, right? So you'd have your problem statement, and then you'd have some of the facts, you know. So I remember one of the case studies that I had to do was on the charcoal company that it's escaping me. They had the black charcoal, and then they had the fuel infused charcoal. Why can't I think of the name of they're the big charcoal company, which I feel like I need to look up because it's going to drive me nuts. and they are Kingsford. Jeez. Wow. Okay. Kingsford. So we had a case study on Kingsford, but they, you know, the case study was actually about, you know, them making a transition from their regular charcoal briquettes to trying to pitch and market their fuel infused ones or gas infused or whatever the heck you call them. But the red ones. And, you know, so we were given stuff like, you know, we were given sometimes balance sheets broken down, you know, sales numbers, stuff like that. And, you know, we had to look at and figure out, you know, what was the next steps. And you always had to start with a SWOT analysis, right? So for those of you who don't know, and I don't know anybody that would just know this because it's an acronym, but it's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And so, you know, it was always like start with a SWOT analysis. That was always like step one, you know, figure out what are the strengths of the company or the product in general, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, right? So usually, so strengths and weaknesses are always internal and opportunity threats are always external, right? So you'd always kind of look at that. Okay, was there competition? You know, there could be an opportunity there because there is no competition or there is a lot of competition, so that's a threat. But you do that kind of breakdown and, you know, you're doing your SWOT analysis. And that's very much steering your brainstorming, right? Because you gotta actually take real facts and build that out. I think the mind mapping, which is kind of interesting, it's you know, it's a visual tool for enhancing the brainstorming process. Drawing a picture, that's the whiteboarding. We do that quite a bit, like at my work, where, you know, we're trying to think through something we need to accomplish or a task, and it's like, you know, on the whiteboard, start off, make a list. What are we trying to accomplish here? And then, you know, sometimes we're doing stuff that are, we got to build. So we'll draw pictures, like, you know, crude pictures of whatever we need to build. And then, you know, it's just a way to kind of visualize. And then you could draw it and go, oh, you know what? That doesn't make sense. That thing we just drew doesn't make any sense or whatever. But it's useful. And then you could, you know, break out stuff into categories, whatever it is. So I think that's a pretty common one in workspaces where you kind of got to leverage some brainstorming to help you kind of figure out the next steps of what you need to accomplish. Let's see. So they have another one, the reverse brainstorming. And, you know, this one's kind of interesting because it's looking at the cause. Like, it's like having people try to figure out ways to cause a problem. So you're actually trying to find a problem with something. And I think this would probably be really useful from a security perspective, you know, whether it's online or in person, but essentially trying to think of all the potential threats to, you know, so say you're a bodyguard or you're, you know, a security team, and you're trying to figure out, like, where are all the weak points in our security protocol or whatever. So then you kind of make a list and determine how to kind of backfill, right? So those are a couple that I think are interesting. There's another one, the five whys, that, you know, it's basically, you know, why is it happening or why does this happen? And you kind of continue the process for five times and you dig deeper each time until you get to the root cause. That's also called the root cause analysis, but, or I've heard it that way. But, you know, again, I think this is another way, in essence, where you're kind of making a list and you're kind of doing a reverse brainstorming in a sense. But yeah, I mean, all these feel like just kind of fancy names for sort of the same thing, but it's interesting because I think it's what's important about it is with brainstorming, it's probably, you always worry that you're not going to just get into this and be able to start off and be productive right away. You always like would have to worry that you're potentially wasting time trying to figure out what to even do to kick off a brainstorming. You know, so these are kind of good directives to put you in the right direction, point you in the right direction. So there's another one, create a six-pointed star, not a pentagram. This isn't Satan worshiping time. This is brainstorming. All right. Unless you're brainstorming how to promote your Satan worshiping church, then I'll make an exception. But so at the center of the star, you write a challenge or an opportunity you're facing. And at each point, write one of the following: who, what, where, when, why, how. I think you can kind of figure out what you're doing there. But, you know, essentially you're trying to hone in a direction to kind of solve all those questions. So now the next set, which they have, is quiet brainstorming, as they call. So, you know, this is kind of not necessarily where you're in a crowded room, or you're in a group, like, you know, where you kind of got to do this to yourself a little bit. So, you know, this is actually how you can do, I guess you could say, remote brainstorming, you know. So, you know, this is like you could do online brainstorming, a little bit harder, but you never know. I mean, so you have a community like chat type of thing, like Slack or Microsoft Teams, you know, Google Docs, where you're essentially all writing at the same time. Now, sometimes this does involve you being, because, you know, sometimes we're working, like at my work, with people who are remote. So, you know, they're, you know, we're essentially doing the same thing. And like what you try to do is, you know, turn the camera on so that they can see the whiteboard, which is kind of hard, but you can use something like a Google Docs where, you know, as you're writing, they could write something and you could both be collaborating on a document. And sometimes that's helpful. But, it, you know, I feel like there's a lot of benefit to just being in person and trying to do the brainstorming, but you don't necessarily need to exclude somebody because they're not in person. So another quiet thing that you could do is where you essentially start off. I mean, this, I say quiet. It's not like we're in a library trying to brainstorm, although that would be interesting. But, you know, this is more like, okay, let's start off the process by thinking of stuff on our own, and then let's get together and talk about that. So, you know, it could start off that you're doing, you know, anonymously. Like, so I've been in sessions where you got post-its and it's like, okay, write down your thoughts about this. And then you write it on several post-its. So create three post-its that have ideas, right? And then we kind of throw them all up on a board. And so then they don't, you know, you may, obviously everybody's going to see that you may put these up there, but they're not necessarily going to tie them directly. So the idea is that these aren't tied to some specific person, right? It's somewhat anonymous, but you put all these post-its up there. And then what you're trying to do is you're trying to actually like bring all the common ideas into clusters, and then find themes, you know, so that you could find a couple themes, you know. Maybe you're trying to narrow it down to one thing you want to focus on at this point, and so you're trying to weed out other ideas. So this is kind of a good way to kind of accomplish that. And so, you know, those are a couple ideas. Now, role-playing brainstorming, you know, is kind of what it sounds, but it's like doing the other kind of brainstorming, except you're trying to role play the scenarios. So, you know, you're trying to figure out if you could simulate maybe a customer slash product experience, right? So somebody walks into your store. Okay, you play the customer, you play the cashier clerk, and you're trying to solve for a customer complaint issue that you have about, you know, whatever, like people not thinking your staff is friendly enough or whatever. So you role play through it and you could figure it out. So, you know, that's just another idea of kind of, you know, doing stuff with role playing. And there's like role storming, reverse thinking, and figure storming, which figure storming is kind of fun because it's you choose a fixture from history or fiction with people that people are familiar with, and what would that individual do to manage a challenge? So let's see, what would Theodore Roosevelt do, or what would Mother Teresa do? That's kind of funny. And as I just spotted that and laughed to myself and then laughed in front of all you 1 to 2 people. So next, what is on the list next? I will get into it. It is, let's see. Well, brainstorming with support. These are kind of fun. Stepladder brainstorming, round robin brainstorming, rapid ideation, and trigger storming. Yeah, they just have fun names. I mean, it's just like, I just want to be like, let's get together and do a rapid ideation or round robin, a brainstorming session, people. We got to think about this. We got to think about it in a very fancy worded way. So round robin is a game in which everyone develops or everyone gets a chance to participate. It's basically, actually, this is kind of what I said with the post-its, you know, so everyone must share an idea and everyone must wait for everyone else to share an idea before coming up with a second idea. So it's more like, okay, everyone gets these post-its and let's go around the room and you write one idea and put it up and let's talk about it. And then we go around the whole table, you know, to kind of talk, and everyone gets a chance to write an idea on a post-it and put it up there. I think sometimes, though, that puts a little bit of pressure on some people who just don't like to be, you know, like too exposed. They're introverts, so they don't necessarily want to talk. So it's either good or bad, you know, from that perspective, because maybe you're forcing somebody to come out of their shell. I don't know. Like I used to be like, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to be spotted. I kind of just wanted to be in the background, but I kind of learned that you don't really get very far in business if you don't talk, you don't express your ideas, good or bad. Hopefully you have more good than bad, but you know, so now I'm just like, whatever, let's do this, you know. And I like to have a meeting where I force people to come out of their shells a little bit, but you know, only to some extent. You can't really force somebody if they're really, really shy about it. So then you got to know, you got to be the good person who's running the meeting to skip over them or, you know, not embarrass them. But anyways, the next one, we got, okay, some more fun names, which are radically creative brainstorming. And you got charrette and what if brainstorming. So charrette, imagine a brainstorming session in which 35 people from 6 different departments are all struggling to come up with ideas. And the process is time-consuming, boring, and often not fruitful. The charrette method breaks up the problem into smaller chunks. This is that, you know, we be chunking, which was like the third episode where, you know, this kind of fits in there. Where, you know, you in anything, when you break stuff down into smaller pieces, it's less intimidating and more likely to be accomplished. So I definitely, I like this charrette, if I'm even saying it right. But, you know, it's basically breaking it down into smaller chunks, and then you break out those chunks and you have people split up into smaller groups to talk about each of those chunks for a set period of time, and then everybody kind of comes back together and, you know, talks about each of their chunks, which is yeah, fun. It sounds funny. So it's not a baking class. You don't go talk about your chunky cookies or chocolate chunk cookies. Yeah. I don't want to go into another tangent about cookies. So you got another one. It's the what if brainstorming. And I'm sure you can figure out what that one is. That's the last one in this list. It's just good. It's a good time, you know, to do some brainstorming. And I think, you know, there's a lot of value in just kind of taking a moment to understand, you know, what you're trying to accomplish, but also trying to think through all the different scenarios. There's a couple things that you want to prevent, I guess you could say. You know, you don't want to fall into the trap of a favorite idea. So if you're participating in, or if you're running a brainstorming session, I should say, like, you got to be careful not to let your already preconceived notion of something influence, right? So if you already have the idea in your head as to what will work, you're not going to have a successful brainstorming session. Like, you really got to be able to step back and say, I want fresh ideas, regardless of what I think will work. And you don't want to, you also just don't want to go into it just trying to validate that. I mean, in essence, you kind of do, but yeah, like it you want to just treat it as something brand new, you know, like I'm trying to come up with brand new ideas. I don't want to let my existing preconceived notions influence that, you know. you also don't want to like dumb down your standards, you know. You want to try to get something of value out of it, right? So you don't want to just settle for the first set of crap that comes out of a brainstorming session. You may need to have multiple ones. And then, you know, I talked about the doing your research thing. Like you definitely, you know, in this, I say this as if like this is applying to like you're working in an office, but like if you have to imagine, say you want to start a business, you're entrepreneurial and you want to start a business, you should go through these exercises. You should definitely do a SWOT analysis of yourself or your business idea. You definitely don't want to go to the bank unprepared, right? And I say the bank, whatever, pitching to investors, your family, whoever. So you make sure that you really do that analysis. You want to make sure that you actually, you know, evaluate the market as best you can before you go dumping money into some idea. You know, like if you see that there is a need for whatever the product is, you know, the scooter car wash. If you really think people have been asking, they're like, why don't I have a Razor scooter? Why is there no Razor scooter car wash in my town? You know, well, you know, if you did your research and you found out that the town over had done it and they had 3 children die from drowning inside of the car wash because for whatever reason, they let them stand on their scooters while they went through the car wash, you know, then you can save yourself some money and time and effort, you know. Razor scooter car wash, bad idea. And you don't need to spend any money to find that out. So yeah, that's my thought about the Razor scooter car wash idea, which is just hilarious to me because I could just see that happening. Like somebody, you know, I mean, I guess if it's not like too hot of water and you're not using like wax, I don't know, that's just, maybe it's a ride at an amusement park or something, I don't know. It's just a funny concept to me because I imagine a car going through a car wash and the brushes and the water and how like terrifying it would be if I was in a convertible, let alone on a Razor scooter. But do that SWOT analysis, you know, find out that the threat is death, that the weakness is your whole body's exposed to hot water and hot wax. So bad idea. Just don't do it. No Razor scooter car wash. Just, I'm trying to save you. If you listen to this episode, I've saved your life and your life savings. But yeah. Okay. So, what's another tip? You're going to try to find patterns with whatever within the brainstorming, right? This SWOT analysis is good for, you know, obviously like figuring out the key points of the idea, but, you know, just general brainstorming in terms of, let's say you're trying to figure out who's your demographic, right? Like, so, you know, who am I really going to appeal to for this product or service, right? So you kind of, it's good to write that out and, you know, figure that out by, you know, if you write it down and you figure out what, you know, because you might detect a pattern, because it could be that, you know, like you imagine Subway with their, not Subway, Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin' Donuts is a good example, I think, of when they decided to do food, right? Like actual food items where they, you know, called it like lunch. And because Dunkin' Donuts, hopefully people who are listening know what that is, but it's a coffee and donut chain that's pretty big on the East Coast. I don't know if it's gotten much past the Mississippi River, but, you know, it's pretty big over here. And, it, you know, they're known for their coffee, and they had obviously the donuts. Actually, they're now Dunkin', just called Dunkin', which I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that one. It was always kind of funny because it was like, you know, you had donuts and coffee and you dunked your donut in the coffee. And that was like a thing, I guess, back in the day. And, you know, I don't really I don't really see the appeal. Maybe people would think that tastes good. I guess there's tea and biscuits where you would dip your biscotti in tea or something like that. But, you know, my whole thing was, like the donut was like, if you went to Dunkin' Donuts and you were going to get a coffee or a tea or, you know, some kind of beverage and you got a donut, they were kind of mutually exclusive. You know, I didn't think they necessarily, maybe they were thought to be paired, but it's not like in a restaurant where people pair wine to fish and meat or whatever, red wines to meat and white wines to fish. And I know that. Yes, I do. Because I worked in a restaurant before. But I don't know exactly what wines, which white wines or red wines, but I just know that the reds pair with the meats. So, again, I digress and tangentize and stream of consciousness, derailing this train, going down the mountain when she comes. Okay. Yeah. I make a sound and I continue talking because I lost my train of thought. Of course, Dunkin' brands. Okay, that's what I was trying to go through that. Imagine doing a SWOT analysis for that, right? You have to imagine there's a certain age range, right? Like there's a certain type of customer. So it's pretty much anybody who doesn't like to sleep in, who's up at the butt crack of dawn, either because they have to or because they want to. But, you know, like originally that's what it was. I think these things opened at like 5 a.m. So it was like you could rely on that as your place to get coffee in the morning. So you'd go out and you'd get your coffee and, you know, possibly a donut to enjoy and call that breakfast, right? And, you know, I'm going to take a stab here. I'm going to say between an age range between 25 and 65, that maybe even 75, because I actually think that there's probably, though, you know, for Dunkin', maybe it's 25 to 75. You just got to throw some kind of number on it, because it may be better to just say between 25 and 55 as one group, and then, you know, 55 to 85 is another group, because, you know, the first group might actually spend a little bit more on the donut, whereas the second group is very much set in their ways and they just want the coffee. You know, they had their eggs for breakfast at their house, but they went out to get the coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, right? So you think about it like that. Now you've got a demographic breakdown, and this is kind of a crude brainstorming session, but, you know, I'm just trying to think through, okay, I'm trying to be a Dunkin' Donuts franchisee or even the main company who's thinking, would it be worth it for us to sell regular food? And I'm thinking, okay, you know, the sales have increased of food items, like, because they've got, you know, pastries like croissants and donuts, and they've had those for a while, between that 25 to 55 market. And it tended to be later in the mornings, right? Like they open at 5, but you're finding people who were, you know, between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock who are actually doing that or making those kind of purchases, right? So your sales of that group between 25 to 55 were higher between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock, right? And then you think breakfast sandwiches, let's do that, you know, because it's a breakfast item, but it could bleed into lunch, right? Because you could get one. Like I like a ham and egg and cheese on a croissant toasted at pretty much any time of the day. I don't really care. Like, I just enjoy it. So I'm in that age range, but I'm not an early riser. I don't get there at 5 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I don't eat there frequently anyways, because it'd be kind of expensive to go there every morning, because I'm of the type of demographic where I feel like I don't spend $1.50 or $2, whatever it is now, on a coffee daily. Like if I go to Dunkin' Donuts, like I'm getting something that's you know, a novelty drink or a specialty drink that's maybe $2.50, you know, and then a croissant sandwich, right, was like $3 or $4, right? So I'm like a $7 to $10 spender at Dunkin' Donuts. So I'm definitely not one of the people who would be in that early morning rush, but I definitely would fit in the analysis of, yeah, I think they would spend about $10. So comparatively, if you're thinking like before we had that stuff, our sales per person were averaging around $3 to $5, and we add food items, and, you know, now you're going to get between $5 to $10, right? this is a very crude example of doing kind of, you know, an analysis. Obviously, like, there's a lot more that goes in to try to figure out if you're going to sell food, right? But you can kind of see what the exercise would be to start, you know, just trying to figure out what the appeal would be and who would be the market and what kind of money you're thinking would be for an increase. And yeah, so I kind of just spitball that because it feels like an easy example I could do on the fly in my head out loud for an audience that's just listening. And at this point, like, how much longer is this guy going to go on a stream of consciousness tangent? Because I got stuff to do. I got to go get something from Duncan now because I'm hungry because he talked about food. Ooh, food. Oh, I got to go grocery shopping later. Oh, I need stamps. Oh, I gotta mail those Christmas cards out later. Oh, no, I forgot. I got to order more Christmas cards. Oh, did I ever finish ordering that stuff for grandpa or grandma? See, that's stream of consciousness right there. And this is how I'm going to end the episode with my final and I don't know, 20th, whatever, stream of consciousness tangent. Okay. Yeah. So this was a fun one. Just because I could just talk randomly about whatever the heck came into my mind. Although I did try to, you know, kind of tie this together with brainstorming. So I did provide that little bit of value, you know, which is in the, you know, 20 to 25 minutes of the middle of this episode. So if you've gotten this far, congratulations. And until next time, this is Finding Your Identity. And I hope to, you know, have you come back for the next episode, which is going to be the 30th episode. And maybe I'll do a stream of consciousness exercise offline to figure out what the heck that one's going to be about. All right. Until next time, this is Finding Your Identity.